I was going to talk to Josh Long about Kafka and Spring Boot, and you know, we eventually got there. We might have meandered through another topic or two on the way, like, say, child rearing, how much we miss conferences, and the quality of Josh's bear hugs. But we do talk about Spring Boot and Kafka, which is very much a chocolate and peanut butter kind of situation. Listen in on today's episode of Streaming Audio, a podcast about Kafka, Confluent, and the cloud. Hello and welcome to another episode of Streaming Audio. I am, as always, your host, Tim Berglund, and I'm joined in the studio today, the virtual studio, by my friend, Spring Developer Advocate at VMware, Josh Long. Josh, welcome to Streaming Audio.
Hey, hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Good to be in the virtual studio.
Yes, the virtual studio, better known to the world as your condo and a room in my basement. The acoustics are decent, so we'll take it.
Yeah. Yours sounds great.
Nobody needs to know.
Nobody needs to know.
Yeah, where we actually are. You know, the humble physical surroundings that we're actually in. But hey, it's in the pandemic. Everybody's at home.
Yeah. No, I was going to say I would have, as happy as I am to talk to you, I am not just a little sad that of all the millions of times that we bumped into each other just last year.
Yes.
And then the year before that and all the 10
and
years.
And all the bear hug I got from you every single time.
Right. It's just sad that now it's like we finally both of us have enough time in a pandemic to sit down. And of course we have to social distance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good. It's like 1,000 miles here. It's pretty good social distancing.
Yeah. We're really, Denver, when we commit, we commit.
We do, taking it seriously.
So, yeah.
Anyway, we were just talking before the show. It was 10 years ago in June that we met at a conference called Epicenter in Ireland.
Yeah.
And I remember that show so clearly. became friends with the organizer, Barry Alistair. He's a great guy. Still, he gets me into more frequently than I deserve. My wife and kids were with us for that trip. That was when my oldest son turned 16. So that was a memorable one. Yeah.
So that was a decade ago.
It was a decade ago. So
is that weird? So that kid has since gone through
calculator,
like everything's like
26 now.
Yeah.
Yes. He's married. He's all grown up. Yeah.
If you had guessed 10 years ago, that things would, how, if you kind of imagine what things would look like in 2020 for your family, not for their larger.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a whole bunch of stuff I wouldn't have called, but that's not 26. I mean, I know that seems young to a lot of people. That wouldn't have seemed too shocking.
Right.
Like I wouldn't, like, I put some kind of timer on it or anything, but I'm not surprised that he did.
Well, he's closer to 30 than not. That's a good way to think about it.
That is also true, and I am going to text him that when we're done with this podcast. Zach, you are closer to 30 than 20. I just want you to rest in that fact.
Wow. It's just marinating the
just
passage of time.
Yeah. You know, but it seems like we talked about this on the podcast recently. You don't really want to hold on to 16 as long as you can.
No.
In respectful disagreement with John Cougar Mellencamp, it's really not what you want to do.
My little girl, she's 15, and she's starting to realize that, you know, she can't always be our little girl. You know, she's got to start growing into her future self. You know,
right.
And so every now and then she is very sad. You know, like, I just want to stay a kid, you know, these like, these moments where she just comes out all melancholy and kind of realizes, you know, soon she'll be in university.
And apart from the parents. And that's if being at home and having the parents that she has is a good thing, then that is like a little something to grieve. Like, you're not
looking forward
to being separate, but wow, it was good.
Well, and she's also looking forward to, you know, in 4 months or whatever, she'll be able to get a driver's permit, you know? So she's like, well, I want to get old enough to do some things, but not old enough to do others. Like,
it's complicated.
It is. I feel for her. It's not easy.
We are, everybody, if you're concerned, we're going to talk about Kafka and Spring Boot. And there's all these things coming. It's Josh, and it's been a while since we talked, so give us a second here. But my middle daughter, you remind me of my middle daughter. I don't remember what birthday it was, and she'd probably prefer that I didn't even say that. She's 24 now, also married. She just got married in May. She's a COVID bride. Lots of fun there.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But there was some birthday where the night before she was in bed crying.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, we're like, oh, what's wrong? And she had it in mind that that next birthday was big girl, and that meant that she would have to stop playing with dolls. And she just couldn't countenance a life with no dolls.
No.
And we're like, no, you don't. That's not true. You can still play with dolls for
absolutely
as long as you want, really. And then, you know, you'll grow up and have kids, and you get to play with dolls with your kids. That's
The best in the circle. And even better, I'm a comic book enthusiast. You know, I always have been. Mm-hmm. And I used to, you know, one of the joys for me of getting into my own working life was suddenly I not only did I not stop playing with action figures every now and then, you know, but the quality of the action figures that I can afford increased markedly.
So,
you know, getting older and getting a job doesn't mean you have to stop playing with toys. It just means you can get really nice toys.
Exactly.
Yeah. So speaking of nice toys, you and I get to work in open source.
We do. Thank you. Excellent segue man move there. we do.
That you and I are, you're one of my heroes because, well, I mean, you know that, but I'm telling the audience. You're one of my heroes because you've made the choice to work with awesome stuff at every step of the way. I see you at different organizations that are doing amazing things, you know, and I love where you are right now because I feel like this is one of the best organizations, bar none, full stop, out there, period.
And at the risk of sounding somewhat tendentious, I agree with that last part there. Yeah. Go on.
But I just love your deliberate sort of focus on like going where awesome is. And you've been at, you and I have known each other, like we said, for what, 10 plus years now. So, And yet you've been at least in four different organizations in that time. And I think, how long have you been with Confluent now? It feels like you are the Kafka.
3.5 years. When we met, I was actually independent.
Yeah.
Just kind of doing stuff. And then
GitHub.
And then there was
DataStax,
the Cassandra community. So.
And then this. So mm-hmm. I always trail you. I'm always learning. Like I in 2010, I knew a little bit about Git, but then, you know, a minute later, it seems like you're out there just teaching people the absolute details of the structures behind Git and doing it while reciting Shakespeare. I'm like, that's amazing, you know? And then, your Cassandra, you know, there's still videos you can bump into that are epic if you want to learn Cassandra and those bits. And now I love, you know, your videos on Kafka and Confluent and the whole Confluent platform, you know, so it is really cool to watch you, my friend. You're a great teacher, and it's just been a great privilege for me because I'm always constantly trailing you, like, oh, what, if he's learning this, I probably should pick it up too, you know?
Thank you. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, is what I'm trying to say.
I really appreciate that. We should probably talk about, we want to talk about Spring Boot and how it intersects with Kafka, and sort of what the it's a chocolate and peanut butter story. I was just telling actually one of the producers of this podcast earlier today that in general the Spring framework plus all things Kafka is a value creating combination.
Oh yeah,
like chocolate and peanut butter.
Right.
But in the event, maybe this is silly, but you know, if you're in the Java world, you probably know what Spring Boot is, but there are going to be listeners who don't, either new to the world or new to Java or something. So for those people, get us started. What's Spring Boot?
Well, okay. So first of all, I regard this possibility with respect and reverence because I've heard about it and I regard it with the same due skepticism, but I can see that it's plausible in the same way that scientists for so long before the discovery of the so-called Higgs boson particle pontificated that it was theoretically possible to discover such a particle, but the science was still out on whether it actually existed or not. They couldn't conclusively prove it, though everything said that it existed. With that same possibility, I concede it is possible that there are people out there not using Spring to build their services for software in production. So for those hypothetical free radicals, Spring Boot is a opinionated take on the Java ecosystem. It's a framework that tries to give you the Ruby on Rails convention over configuration approach while not taking any of the flexibility away. So it does that through not code generation, which is notoriously hard to unwind once you've made that bet, but instead through something called auto configuration. And what that means is that when the application starts up, it looks at runtime queues, things like the presence or not presence of a class on a class path, things like properties in the environment, like a environment variable or system properties, and things like the presence or not presence of other objects in the Spring application context. And it uses those to dynamically, create objects that you need to support what you're doing. So for example, if I wanted to create a web service, there's all sorts of things that you and I both know go into that. There's a web server that needs to be stood up. There's conversion. There's a web frame. There's actually a framework on top of the web server, right? So you've got your bare bones HTTP service, but that's not the same as having a programming model on top of which you can expose endpoints. There's the validation, the conversion, the routing, all that stuff that needs to get created before you, Jane or Joe developer can write their first line of business differentiating value. And so Spring Boot says, well, okay, if we detect the netty reactive web support on the class path or a embedded servlet container like Jetty or Tomcat or Undertow, then we'll automatically create a web server. And we'll also create Spring MEC, or we'll set up Spring WebFlex, right? We'll create everything so that by the time you start writing your first line of code, all you need to do is to create one little class with @controller on it, right? And then now you've got a web endpoint. And this goes on. This opt-in mechanism where you express what you want in terms of the dependencies that are on the class path, in terms of these other configuration queues, that auto-configuration is very powerful, and it pairs very nicely with this idea called a starter. A starter is a library. It's a dependency that is empty. It's devoid of Java code. It is instead, it does only one thing. It transitively imports other dependencies. And so when you see Spring Boot Starter Web Flux or Web, that brings in Tomcat and Spring MVC and the Servlet API and all that stuff, right? It brings in everything I need to force Spring Boot to auto-configure all those bits required to create a web application. If I bring in a Spring Boot Starter, is it Kafka? I think it's probably just Spring Boot Starter Kafka. It brings in everything I need to talk to a Kafka broker, right? And so we have starters all over the place. And you can remember those starters by memory, like I sometimes am able to do, but it's much more natural instead for developers today to go to start.spring.io. And there they can just shop the catalog of checkboxes, basically. You just go through there's a long list, there's auto-completion. You can discover them manually by exploring them, by perusing them, like scrolling down the aisles of production. Or you can just type in KAF and you'll get something interesting. Actually, you'll get a lot of different things that are interesting in the case of Kafka. So that generator there will generate a Maven build for you and a skeletal source main resources or source main Java structure for you, right? Or it'll generate a Gradle build. And then that's it. The rest is all done through this auto-configuration mechanism. And the result is that your dependency management is trivial now, much easier than it would have been without Spring and Spring Boot. And the code is, I'm now very happy to take my Java 15 code or my Kotlin code or my Groovy code and, compare it to any Node.js program because we can get a lot more done with a lot less code these days, it's a wonderful place to be. So I think that's the value proposition. There is an opinionated approach in the Java or JVM ecosystem and with focus on production.
By the way, I really like the way you say start.spring.io.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you like saying that, don't you?
Start.spring.io.
And you need to know, and I don't mind saying this publicly at all, that was an important inspiration for the naming of developer.confluent.io, the
nice. Confluent
developer domain, which is a thing that, that is very much still in the process of being built out. I
of course
have to record this. I'm working on some content that goes there, some videos.
Cool. I'll watch it.
Videos, tutorials, executable tutorials, all kinds of cool things for just learning how to use primarily Apache Kafka and a certain amount of Confluent Platform and Confluent Cloud. You know, that stuff's allowed there since it's Confluent developer.
Right, of course.
But hearing you say start.spring.io, it's just so easy to say, right? Like nobody walks out of the room, back when people went in rooms, nobody walks out of the room wondering, what was that domain? I can't quite remember.
No, so absolutely not.
developer.confluent.io. It's, it doesn't quite scan as well because just the syllables don't work out, but it's super easy.
And yes.
It's better than confluent.io/developer. I mean, I just feel dumb saying that.
Yeah, no, you should. I'm sad for you, for your family.
Right. That's right. Exactly. Just the shame of it. That really is generational, but developer.confluent.io just works.
You know? It does. And I see the dogs happy. Everybody's happy when you say that. No, start.spring.io for me, as you may know, is my second favorite place on the internet. My first favorite place on the internet, of course, is production, right? I love production. You should love production. Everybody
should
love production. It's the happiest place on earth. It's better than Disneyland. But if they haven't been there, if they haven't already been to production, developers can begin their journey there at start.spring.io. So I hope they will. And it's a great way to bring in Kafka. It's a great way to build an app that is, it's got everything except for, and actually, if you've got a local host install of Kafka for your developer stuff, and you've got the normal settings, you don't need to do anything. You just start writing code to talk to Kafka. You can inject the Kafka template, or you can set up a stream listener or anything, you know? If you want to override it and point it to a different host import, different cluster, different whatever, you can do that, right? But the defaults are just very useful.
But just to recap what you're saying, the annotation looks for stuff on the class path. So, you know, you give it the controller annotation. It's like, well, which one? What do I do? Well, I found Jetty, or I found whatever. Mm-hmm. And it figures out the right way, it figures out the right thing to do. And those things are present on the class path, but class path, by virtue of being in the build files dependency declarations, they are there by virtue of having been generated. And I checked the check boxes.
Start.spring.io.
That's super cool.
It's an opinion. So Ruby on Rails was just a web framework, app babysitting databases, right? You remember that use case, right?
Oh, I do.
So, but Spring Boot is, it's the convention of configuration for like everything, right? If you want to do security, if you want to do batch processing, you want to do integration, you want to do, you know, BPMN, if you want to do web services, if you want to do hypermedia, if you want to do REST, if you want to do you know, microservices with Spring Cloud, and if you want to do data flow, and I mean, just everything, every little possible thing out there. If you want to do, and there's particular start, like if you can't find the starters on start.spring.io, that doesn't mean that they don't exist. It just means that they don't meet our fairly high watermark for inclusion on start.spring.io. Ooh. So we don't include every single random checkbox in the ecosystem, only those that have a vibrant community that have committed to maintaining those starters with each release of Spring Boot. So with each new release. So you'll find, you know, the checkboxes for Alibaba, for Google Cloud, for AWS, for Microsoft Azure, for, you know, all that. Those are there because they have people that work on that every single time there's a new release of Spring and Spring Boot. So you never have interoperability issues. No, it's never the case that one checkbox on start.spring.io requires an older version of Spring Boot than the one that you've selected on start.spring.io. So it's a really high bar, but as a result, it just works. You can just go to write code and not worry about it. There are some, but that's not to say that others don't actually maintain their own starters, right? It might be very well the case that they do. You can check your favorite project. They might even have their own starters, you know, which I love.
No, exactly. And that's just, again, that's a Maven dependency, put in your build and you're good. Right.
And that's a big deal, right? It's this, you and I are, at least me, okay? I'm going to say me.
Just you.
I like just the software. I really don't care about Gradle or Maven. Not even a little bit. Not one bit. 0% care about it. It's not a hill I'm willing to die on, or even, it's not even a hill I'm willing to get on top of. I don't even care how to do that. It just,
the hill is not even on your maps.
Right.
The troop movements near this. Right.
Yeah, some people choose Google Maps and they choose toll roads and stuff like that. Me, I just choose no hills. None. Just avoid them at all costs.
That's going to do it.
Yeah, so I, this is not, it's not a hill I want to die on. I don't care. It means zero. It means nothing to me. It means so little to me that it's actually, it'll actually cause me to yawn just talking about it. Right. So the idea that people got all bent out of shape over their built systems is, what am I supposed to do? Am I allowed to just leave the room? Is that right? Is that polite? I don't know. You know, what's the right answer there? So Spring Boot doesn't care either, but we want to make it so that it's as painless as possible to get started. Right. So you don't even have to focus on it. You can just, you opt in one dependency that equals the whole tranche of like web functionality, one dependency that equals the core support for Kafka. And that is, by the way, interesting because the core support for Kafka is just that. It's just the foundational layer. We have layers here, Tim. Layers, okay?
Okay.
So in the Spring ecosystem.
Like onions. Like onions or like cakes? Which more like cakes?
Oh, actually, I'm, you know, my partner, Tammy, she loves onions.
Okay.
All right. Disagree. So, all right. In the Spring ecosystem, we have the core Spring for Apache Kafka project. Yeah. And that project gives you, you know, it'll give you the basics. It'll give you the ability to connect to a Kafka instance, and you can actually get a reference to a Kafka template. So you can use that to fire off messages with a one-liner, that kind of thing. You can set up a message listener container, you know, kind of like the old JM, you know, message-driven EJBs, right? The idea of a container that receives messages. So all that is in the core Spring for Apache Kafka starter. So you go to start.spring.io and you choose that one. You're already talking to Kafka and you're already sending and receiving messages. And you have a low enough level of an abstraction that you can do anything that you want to do, right? You can actually get access to the low-level Kafka APIs and so on there, which is already valuable. If you're trying to do something very particular, then that's fine. If you're trying to do something just very generic, there's also suitably high-level abstractions implied in that dependency to support that use case as well. But we can go further. So we have a project called Spring Integration. Spring Integration is a pipes and filters messaging framework, right? It's a framework for building enterprise application integrations in the style of Gregor Hoppe's and Bobby Wolf's seminal tome, Enterprise Integration Patterns, right? That,
yes.
That page turner of like 800 pages from 2004 that I keep under my pillow.
Yes. Yes.
That framework is it's all about integration, right? And as you and I both know, you can simulate something that is synchronous with an asynchronous API. If I have an asynchronous API, I can force it to act from the perspective of the client as a synchronous API. But I can't do it the other way around. I can't take a synchronous API and emulate an asynchronous one, right?
No. Well, so, it's difficult.
Right. So basically, from an integration perspective, it's better just assume that everything is asynchronous. And, you know, that way the component model, if you write the code in such a way that everything is asynchronous, then if you want to, you can have everything execute in the same task executor, the same thread pool, basically. And then it's effectively synchronous, but the API is still such. So you have this pipes and filters model where messages come into one component, they get processed in some way, then they get sent out. And so the contract between components is just like standard in, right? Message out, message in, message out, message in. They chain together. So Spring Integration, in order for it to do its work, it needs to source a message from something in the real world, right? Something out there, far beyond the sandstone.
The boundaries of the firm foundation of the framework.
Right, yeah, far beyond the sandstone beaches of the comfort of a framework and abstraction, right? So something like Kafka, something like FTP or message mailbox or FTP server or a TCP UDP package or MQTT frame, whatever, right? Anything in the world that isn't the soft, cushy, cozy confines of my Java compiler, right? I want to take that event out there in the world and turn it into a message that I can deal with in my Java code, right?
Right.
So that Spring Integration uses an adapter to do that. That's very, again, this is terminology borrowing from that book. And these adapters allow us to take messages in, and when we're done processing it, we can take that message and send it out through an outbound adapter. So inbound adapter, outbound adapter. Sometimes when we send a message out, we want a response. So it's a request reply flow instead of just a fire and forget flow, right? So that's called an outbound gateway. And also the other way around, when I have a message that comes in, and I'm expected to produce a reply, that's called an inbound gateway. So Spring Integration provides Kafka support. There's a module for Spring Integration and Kafka. So you can do that, right? There's also Spring Cloud Stream. And Spring Cloud Stream is an abstraction for building, it's an abstraction that says, look, you want to connect, you want to get message from A to B, right? You want to send a message to this broker or to this thing over here. But I don't want to write code in terms of the low-level Kafka APIs or low-level RabbitMQ APIs or low-level Kestrel or Google Cloud PubSub or, you know, whatever. I just want to write code in terms of the Spring Framework message channel. And so I can say, okay, here's a message channel. Send a message into the message channel. And by virtue of the external configuration, that message will get delivered to something else. I bind that Java interface reference that I've got to an actual exchange or destination in the broker somewhere, right? And there's another module in Spring Cloud Stream that does that has a similar function, but it doesn't work in terms of the message channel. It's actually Spring Cloud Stream for Kafka Streams. And this is my favorite, right? So Kafka Streams is super, super cool, right? So Kafka Streams is like, there's like half the use cases for which we might have used Spark yesterday.
Right.
Just something I can do in my little Spring Boot app, right?
Exactly.
Which is to me just a winner. That's a huge deal. But nonetheless, I'd like things like conversion and like message conversion and so on to be a little bit easier. I'd like things like actually constructing the instances of the K topics and the K tables and K streams. Yeah, K streams and K tables. I'd like the sourcing of those objects to be a little bit easier. So Spring Cloud Stream for Kafka Streams does a lot of that. So it's really, you're still dealing in terms of these very nice interfaces as opposed to the glue code that you're so often having to worry about otherwise, right?
Yes.
And so it's a really nice mix. And that's one of my favorite projects in the Spring ecosystem, actually, Spring Cloud Stream for Kafka Streams, because, well, it gives you, you can treat Kafka like a regular message queue if you want, but
not this should, point. But if you had to.
Right, yeah, yeah, I guess, right? That's if you want, right? But the Kafka Streams thing is like, oh, that's, now I see why people are, you know, what's the right word? Really, really enamored with Kafka, right?
Right.
It alleviates or it obviates the need for just whole categories of other infrastructure, other middleware, other deployments, you know? Just
other computation and storage needs that you have. The boundaries of the platform go well outside of a pipe between components.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And yeah, I really just brilliant. I'm just so enamored with that. And you know, I've been doing a lot of, here's the thing. I've been doing a lot of reactive stuff, you know, like the last 2 or 3 years.
Relevant to our interests.
Right. Well, but, and so you start thinking about data flow and composition in terms of these sort of functional APIs. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I found, oh, okay, wait, there's this Kafka Streams thing that it's not exactly reactive, but it's very much the same idea. It's this pipes and filters architecture. You have these functions that operate on streams of data, right? And you're just building this pipeline. And it just maps naturally, just one-to-one to what I'm thinking it'll do. Absolutely amazing. What a privilege for me to be able to use that, you know?
And there's a few things you said in there I want to talk about. You did say something like, you know, this keeps you from having to construct this, that, and the other object just to get simple work done, which is, it's 15 years of a core Spring value right there. I mean, that's Spring has always been trying to keep you from having to do that.
In version of control.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to do it, just not you.
Right. And, you know, that's your passion. You said at the beginning, what you care about is the code, and you don't even want to talk about the build. And, well, you know, good. Well, somebody needs to care about the build, but that's just consistent with, you know, I think what you do is teaching people about Spring. Let's focus on the differentiated value that you're trying to create and get all the other stuff out of the way.
Right. And, you know, we have people in the Spring team that have no hair. They're completely bald. No hair at all. That's because they spent time to worry about these dependencies so that we don't have to. Don't dishonor their sacrifice by then plunging the depths of the build management. It's just such a waste.
You know? Don't do it. Don't dishonor their sacrifice. Their work has not been easy.
No, it's been a nightmare.
And we just don't want to profane it by worrying about these things that we don't have to worry about if we're using Spring.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying there's not going to be a dependency that we haven't thought of that you might have to integrate, but even then, you know, hopefully if you bring your dependency and it has a parent version of log4j or whatever, by bringing it into a Spring Boot build, we've already level set the version of log4j. So hopefully you get consistency there, you know?
Oh, man. That's worth, you know, we're talking about open source software here, but
oh yeah,
that alone is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars to plenty of teams. Just getting logging out of the way with. If you're not a Java developer, then you just don't know. You don't.
Right.
And we, you know, it's not something Josh and I can talk about in public, really. It's a painful thing if you haven't experienced it.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know.
It's a nightmare. Well, you and I came from a time when, first of all, the build was a nightmare before.
Right.
This was even worse with Ant. Now we have the tools to, like, declaratively level set stuff. But with Ant, it was just like, does this work? No, okay, throw that out. Does it work now? Right. You know, whatever. But, and then there's also the runtime configuration, the reams and reams of, like, deployment descriptors and all this stuff that, by the time you've finally gotten to hello world, you're just tired. You know, you're just, I don't even care about the world anymore. I'm just going to leave it here. You know, like,
right.
Just so,
I can't,
the 5-minute demo was not possible.
Can't even say hello. Yeah.
Yeah. Just hi, you know? So yeah, now we're deployment descriptor free. We're mostly build management configuration free, and we can focus on these higher order atoms, you know, these higher order bits, these higher order things that matter to my business. Right. Which is, again, caring about production. You know what? That's a good point, actually, which is today, 2020, if you ask me or arguably any CTO and I'm sure you, you know, if you ask anybody who's been around for a minute about what they want most in an engineer, it's not, they don't want that. Nobody wants a lone cowboy, right? Or cowgirl. Nobody wants this narcissist. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants a person that insists on having ownership of one section of the code. What they want is people who are focused on production, right? It's people who ship.
Yeah.
And so I just think it is so nice that today the things that, because you remember when we started doing Java and there was this idea that what you did in your development machine, which by definition was not going to be the same thing as your production machine, needed to be like reconfigured before it got to production. So you would develop on Windows because what else would you develop on?
Sure,
right. And then you throw it over the wall and lots of people would configure it and change things. And then it would be run in a Solaris machine. Right. And
yeah.
So, well, of course that's not the same environment at all. Right. And that took a lot of regression testing and it took a lot of like, yes, Java gave you write once, run anywhere, but everything else didn't. Right.
I'm so all the infrastructure words in here.
What?
I was kind of hoping you were going to use those words. It sounded like that's where you were going, right? Once run anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the reality of the tooling and frameworks we used back there was write once and then run very carefully in exactly one other place with all of this bespoke kind of baling wire and duct tape all around it.
It was crazy. It just absolutely boggles the mind. And of course, now, you know, it's not Solaris. I mean, I love, you know, pour one out for Solaris. I love Solaris, but it didn't win, right? It's not the server du jour, and nor is Windows, right? It's Linux, so that's not hard. I can make sure that I'm running on Linux when I develop or at least have a virtual machine or a Docker container. And then the database I'm not using like an embedded database in my development environment and then using some overly expensive thing that I can't run also in my development environment, right? It's no longer the case that I need to have production only licenses and that developers need to pay $100,000 or whatever for their own developer license or whatever, you know, some crazy thing like that. If I'm using Postgres, I can use it in both places. If I'm using Kafka, I can use the same thing in both places. So now the gap between production and development is gone. And so the next thing is, if all that is gone, we don't have to maintain these two profiles for the code base, these two branches versus, you know, development versus production. If all that's gone, and now I can focus on higher order stuff, what else is possible then when we're not forced to think about all this low level stuff? And then, well, for me, it's like, well, okay, of course I can start thinking about building more reliable services, right? Now that we've got this cloud architecture, we're so far removed from, you know, the individual instances of the service that we're deploying. We're so far removed from the infrastructure and our code is so far above all that now we're thinking about these really sort of like, okay, if I send a message to this service, what happened, right? And it's not hard to get a service connected to another via Kafka, right? It's easy, you know? I just think that focus on production, that focus on higher order abstractions is super valuable. And I wish we had it 20 years ago.
You know, that's a thing. It would have been better, but I don't know. This is the keynote I gave at Kafka Summit, developed this idea in a little bit of detail, and I'm giving it at some more events this fall. There's always a developmental process that we go through. And
yeah.
This happens in technology stacks and communities. People and relationships, children do it all. It's everywhere. Yeah. You know, it's just living things develop. And it would have been nice if we had had that. I don't know if we would have known what to do with it. Like, we weren't at a point where it made sense. Looking back, it's like, wow, I wish I had all those tools then. But, you know, we had to grow them.
Yeah, but I think people were struggling with deployment. You know, we've always had this. I don't think anybody ever said, oh, what do you mean? I mean, there were some people, I'm sure, but they were vendors, right? Like, I don't think many people were very upset when we finally got the tool to say, oh, I no longer need to care what operating system I'm deploying to.
Exactly. No, and it made all the sense in the world. Right. And I'm sure there's things that would have been helpful. But for example, and this is total bunny trail, but I'm just going to do it because it's Josh and Tim talking here. But the way we talked about the cloud when the cloud was new.
Yes.
And, you know, we said, you know, I would try to explain, I read this article on this thing called S3, and it's like a big disk in the sky. And okay, that's easy. Oh, there's this thing called EC2 now. Like, you can just make servers. And so, you know, at Christmas, you can just spin up more servers for your retail business. And then in January, you spin them down so you don't pay for them. I wasn't building applications that could do that then. You know, nobody was. It was a true statement that's what the service did, but we weren't really developmentally capable of using it in that way because the rest of our ecosystem had not grown. Spring Boot happens to be an interesting part of that specific development process, being a framework that lets you build microservices.
Right. Oh, you're talking about the microservices. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Microservices. But you're right. We still built monoliths. When the cloud native era arrived, most of us were building monoliths. You're right. But on the other hand, and again, I work at VMware, but I'll be the first to say I don't know much about VMs. When one of the VMware use cases, like one of the original use cases, was, can I develop against a virtual machine on my local machine,
right,
and have it be a copy of production, right? Can I actually, or better yet, can I stand up infrastructure that I thought was only in production or some shared integration environment that I need to be on the VPN for? Can I just get that on a local machine and take it home with me so I can like develop locally, right? That can,
without
and can test the VPN, without having to
all kinds of things.
Crazy. Exactly. So that was phenomenal to me. That was a game changer to say I can just package production and just use it so I can try it out without hurting production. Oh, and so then when we got to AMIs, you know, Amazon's virtual machines, of course we could take that package production and just clone it, you know, and just have more of them in production. Why couldn't I? That makes a lot of sense, actually. And then you get containers and it's just, you're right. We did have to grow into it, but it just seemed so natural at every step of the way. And, you know, it forced a sea tide change in the way we built software. And so now you start thinking about what happens if you have lots of services, right? Well, of course you want to communicate. Well, suddenly RPC doesn't seem very reliable, right? That's not a pattern I think any of us want to espouse when we know better. So suddenly messaging, suddenly cloud scale messaging. And it's just obvious that something like Kafka was going to just crush it, right? Just absolutely kill that whole use case. Just make it like, well, of course that's done for you. It's done. Just
right.
Just go to production. You're done. Don't worry. It's like, if it serves how many billions of requests per whatever at Netflix, then it'll probably do just fine for you too, you know?
So
some crazy.
And another question I've had kind of bounce around in my head is, you've been talking about applying the sensibilities of the Spring framework to messaging, which Kafka is unlike legacy messaging systems in important ways. But you said something at one point, like you can bind a message to a particular destination, which is a messagey sort of way to look at it. And with that, and I know that quote unquote destination can be a topic, and so it's fine, and that Kafkaizes that abstraction.
Which leads
me to the question. Something you and I have talked about in person before. But back, remember when we could do that. But just, and this is a general Spring question. You have all of the APIs in all of the world for the things that you want to do. And 90% of the API surface area is noise to you as a developer. There's really this kind of Pareto distribution of features right. and the thing where this is the little chunk you want, and the rest of it is off in the tail, and you don't care. And Spring makes that chunk all work in a consistent and Spring-like way. So you learn, if not literally one API, one kind of accent and speak in that dialect, and it's easy, and you do that to Kafka. But what am I going to say? I'm going to say, when you wrap APIs, the abstractions leak. Because then sometimes you have to break out into that other 80%. This is me 100% endorsing the approach of building, and the normal story I hear of people actually using Spring Boot is they're building microservices. Yeah. And if Kafka's in the picture, then their microservices are integrated through Kafka, and it's a beautiful world. It's like living in a Star Trek episode. And
yep. Better.
What's that?
Light.
Even better.
Better. It's like
speed. Yeah, there's with no Borg or no anything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, Google.
But yes, that's like all the right stuff, and Spring Boot's a common part of that. But what if? What happens when? How do those abstractions leak when you really need to just be in the Kafka mode of things and not the Spring mode?
That's why you'll see us introduce things in terms of layers, and I alluded to some of that earlier. I talked about auto configuration. Let's start with like low level stuff, like auto configuration. The idea behind inversion of control or dependency injection is that something central is figuring out the wiring of all your objects. And you can write code saying, I have expressed a dependency on this piece of, on this type. Well, I'm expressing a dependency on, let's say, a data source or a connection factory or something like that. I don't care how that thing was realized. I don't care how it was, resource initialization and acquisition. That's left to the container, right? That's left to Spring. That's part one. So my surface area there isn't a particular API. It's just it's an interface. That's a generic interface. It has nothing to do with Spring. So that's the first bit. You're decoupled in that way. But you can also inject specific types, right? And the other thing is, because Spring is doing all this stuff, there's lots of different objects that are being created for you. So like I mentioned the example of the web server earlier. What if you wanted to change the way that the embedded Tomcat was created? Well, in this case, you just register a bean of the same type as the one that we're registering, and Spring Boot knows to back off anywhere it sees that you've expressed a more specific opinion than the one that it's got by default. It short circuits the evaluation of the one that it provides out of the box, and it defers to yours. So that's one way where you can have the defaults, the common convention over configuration default, but override the default if you like at any given juncture. And this is true for any of the thousands of objects that get wired up for you automatically in all the different starters and all the different wonderful wild world of Spring. That's the first part. The second part is when you get to these abstractions, with the actual concrete types against which you must compile, now you have layers, right? So we talked about the Kafka template. Well, template in Spring is, in the Spring ecosystem, is a client that gives you APIs that map to common one-liners, right? Like the Kafka template has something like convert and send. So you give it a regular object and a string maybe, and it'll give you, and it'll send the message. It'll take that object, pass it through a converter, and then send it to that destination implied by that string, something like that, right? Well, that's very high level, and it assumes a whole bunch of things. Well, okay, there's also a version that also takes, instead of just a regular Java object, it takes a message, which you're expected to have already, it's an envelope object that has headers and a payload, and you're expected to already have converted that payload, for example, and you provide headers. Okay, that's a little bit more conventional, but it's still very low, still a very high level. Well, okay, there's another version that probably takes something like a callback where you get to execute code within a session, a client, you get access to a current client, and you can do everything you would at the lowest level of the API, but you're not worrying about how to acquire that client or anything else. It's just, all that, you're just given a callback that says, when this client is ready for you to use, here it is. But when you exit the callback, then it gets sent, right? So the same client, the same template will have all these different layers. That's one way. Right, I mentioned Spring Cloud Stream, which has this very simple message channel in, message channel out kind of modality. Right, and I said that does sort of trivialize what it is to have a message broker. Right, to have a message queue, it is really just pipe message into the pipe, message out of the pipe, message into the pipe, out of the pipe. And you're right, you've sacrificed some of the flexibility there. But for this common case of just send data there, please. That works well. That said, we also have Spring CloudStream for Kafka streams. And there you're given the rich lower level, you know, given the actual low level types of K streams and K tables with which you can do stuff, right? So you're not giving up on that either. So I think it's just really, and you can mix and match. These, using Spring CloudStream for Kafka streams doesn't preclude you from also then using this Kafka template at the lower level to just get access to the low level API and do something with it, right? I think that's the right answer. I think we just provide layers and we say, if you want to work at a high level, very high level, then be our guest, start here. This will get you sending data in and out. But if you want to also then get down into the Kafka streams bits, you can use this particular thing over here. And if you want to get down to the low level Kafka APIs, you know, down to the lowest level, then you can use this template or just inject the client itself. You know, you can actually just, you get access to the objects that are required by the Kafka API, the types that have org.apache.kafka, whatever, in the types, in the packages. You know,
you have those directly, which is, I mean, that's the thing you want. When you've got a layered system, you want to be able to peel off the layer that you're in and directly access the layer underneath.
Right.
And as a developer using the layer of abstraction, you do want to know one layer down. Not because you want to touch it, because remember, the Pareto distribution of features in the API, you probably don't need 80% of them, and the 20% of them that you do need, you've got this nice abstraction that adds its own value and you're happy using
right.
it. But it never works all the way, right? You always have to peel that layer off. And so know those types underneath there, that API underneath there, you can get access to them, and that's a good thing.
Right. You're absolutely right. I should have started with that, which is everything you can do in Kafka, you can still do by virtue of the indirection that Spring provides. But if you want to step up the ladder a little bit, you can, you know, and even there, actually Kafka streams, I just mentioned, it feels very weird to say that. I just said you can use the low level Kafka stream API
from suddenly.
But Kafka streams is to anybody from the old messaging world, Kafka streams feels like, you know, it's in
right.
the sky, you know,
it's not a high level API. But yeah. I can personally attest from our work together with Spring Cloud Streams. It was a year and a half ago, and it was fairly early. We needed some help getting it running in a few ways, but neither one of us do it very well at the beginning. But you really have that system where there's the, you know, friendliness with the rest of the Spring ecosystem.
Yep.
But then you're just you got K tables and K streams, and you got all that API. It's not like Spring has attempted to create its own generalization of that with Beam or something. You know, it's a very sane approach in my mind. I like it a lot.
In fact, for the Kafka stream stuff, what I found was you and I took code that was just native, naked, public static void main and Kafka stream code, and we got it working inside of Spring, and then we just started deleting things. It was the same code. We were able to just remove certain parts of it. That's all. Like, it's the same exact code. We didn't add new code. We didn't have to change it. We just removed. You're still using Kafka Streams, which is awesome, because Kafka Streams, number one, awesome. I'm a big fan, as you know. That's, for me, truly, 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 that was when I started becoming, when I finally it clicked for me. I'm a simple person with simple ideas, so it took a long time for me to really appreciate, why people keep talking about Kafka as though it's this, you know, it's not just a pipe, you know, it's not just that. It's not just a faster RabbitMQ or JMS or Active, you know, whatever. It's a completely wrong way to think about it. That's not the way to think about it. You know, you're missing the fact that there's actually a database there, and that database can do state computation. You know, amazing.
My guest today has been Josh Long. Josh, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
Thank you, Tim, for having me. It's been a pleasure as always, my friend.
Hey, you know what you get for listening to the end? Some free Confluent Cloud. Use the promo code 60PDCAST, that's 60PDCAST, to get an additional $60 of free Confluent Cloud usage. Be sure to activate it by December 31st, 2021, and use it within 90 days after activation. And any unused promo value on the expiration date will be forfeit, and there are a limited number of codes available, so don't miss out. Anyway, As always, I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on a YouTube video or reach out in our community Slack. There's a Slack signup link in the show notes if you'd like to join. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover us, which we think is a good thing. So, thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.